I'm a doctor, not a mechanic.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back, and thanks for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show. The number is 888-914-9149. Cyrus, I've just got to mention this story. It's so strange. Page Six is the source. Anderson Cooper. You know who Anderson Cooper is, right, Cyrus? You've seen CNN.
Oh, yeah. I've been watching him since I was a little kid. He'd be on this... they brought in televisions into all of the classrooms, and they had this thing called Channel One. And he was young, and he was a broadcaster on that. So I've been watching him.
So that
my
was
whole life.
Before his CNN days, then.
Long before.
Wow. Well, then tell me what you think of this story. I'm just going to put it out there, and you tell me what you think. Anderson Cooper, who is in a same-sex relationship, he revealed on a television program last week that his late mother, Gloria Vanderbilt, the Gloria Vanderbilt, offered to be a surrogate for him for a child when she was 85 years old. Now, he said what? This. He revealed it. Yeah, I know. So he says in the interview, he says, I finally said to her, I was like, Mom, I love you, but even for you, this is just crazy. This is just nuts. He's 54. He says, that is so weirdly Oedipal on a whole new level. He joked that had his children been born from his mother, it would have been on the cover of the New York Post for the rest of his life. He says his mother wouldn't let go of this idea. The CNN host revealed that his mother continued to offer her services as a surrogate, despite being so much older than him, 85 years old. He says, then fast forward to 2 years later, I get something in the mail that my mom has sent me. It's a newspaper clipping and a photograph. The headline is Grandmother Bears Child for Son. And I see it's some woman, I think in Italy, who was like 65 or something, or maybe 70. And it's a photo of her holding this little newborn baby in the labor room. She's in the delivery room, rather. She's in the delivery room, and her son and his husband are right there, ready to catch the baby. Fortunately for Anderson Cooper and his then unborn child, he pursued a different route, and his mother, the late Gloria Vanderbilt, did not achieve her wish to be the surrogate of the baby. I mean, as I'm reading it, I'm just thinking about this and the levels of weirdness. So anyway, I just wanted to put that out there, Cyrus. What do you make of that?
I'm glad he didn't let his mom do that. That's a real strange. That's strange.
That's a very finessed way to put it. I like your finesse. I like your restraint. But now there is something to say about this. First of all, FYI, everybody, surrogacy and in vitro fertilization, these are seriously sinful. Sounds like there are a whole bunch of other sinful things going on in this bigger picture here. But suffice to say, don't do that. Don't hire a surrogate. Don't do IVF. Don't do these things. And you say, well, why not? I mean, if you can bring a baby into the world, isn't that a good thing? Yeah, it's a good thing. But you can do bad things that will bring babies into this world. And I don't think I need to explain that. I think most adults could figure out what I'm talking about. You can do some really bad things and bring a child into this world. So just simply the fact that somebody says, well, isn't it a good thing that a child's coming into this world? Yes, but you shouldn't go about bringing the child into the world in certain ways, and this is one of them. And somebody may not be satisfied and say, well, I don't understand why. What is wrong with it? If the husband and the wife want to have a child, what is wrong with that? Well, there's several things wrong with it. May I say to you, one thing is that for the man, in order for the process to take place, it will involve another sin, or actually a series of sins on the man's part, in order to fulfill his role in vitro fertilization. That's one part. Another thing is that it reduces marital love and the gift of a child to a laboratory experiment. So it moves it out of its proper context, the intimate marital love between a husband and his wife, and it's now essentially a lab experiment in a petri dish with someone wearing a lab coat and a face mask. It removes the element of the love between the husband and the wife. So I'll just leave it at that. I mean, when I first saw the story, I thought, that's so weird. I'm just not even going to think about that. But then I thought, no, there's a reason why we could talk about this on the program, because it's a reminder of just how whacked out and weird things can get if you start going down these roads. And who knows where you will wind up. So I'm with you, Cyrus. I'm just glad that Anderson Cooper, whatever problems he may have, at least he didn't buy into that problem.
I pity the fool goes home crying to his mama.
What? What was that? That was Mr. T, but what did he say? Okay. All right. So anyway, so whatever other problems Anderson Cooper may have in his life, at least he dodged a bullet on that one. Can you imagine Cyrus trying to explain that to your child when the child gets old enough?
I can't imagine it.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just because something can be done doesn't mean it should be done.
And there's all these kids that want a family and they want a home that are here right now. So
they want a mom and a dad.
Look into adoption. So it's beautiful. Yeah. Adoption is beautiful.
It is indeed. It is indeed. Well, thank you. Let's go now to David in Denver. Hello, David.
Hello.
Do we have David?
So,
there we go.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay. So, I guess my main question is, what is your favorite beer?
That's certainly not your real question. What's your real question?
Okay. So my real question is, my call dropped earlier, so I don't know if you have any notes on that, but everything that's been talked about, I just get hope from listening to Relevant Radio. And my real question was along the lines of encouraging our kids to, like, bringing our kids back to the faith as we see them, you know, being sucked in by the culture and the lies of the culture that we're in, and like feeling attacked from all sides. So I think about Our Lady of Prompt Succor, like Andrew Jackson, and when you were talking about Lepanto, that it's happened here in the United States. And
what has?
I think about the Blessed Virgin Mary, you know, helping us out. I mean, I don't know the exacts of the exact details of the story of Our Lady of Prompt Succor. My wife's family on her mom's side, they're all from New Orleans. So I learned it from her about Our Lady.
Well, one thing for sure is that if this is what you're referring to, is that Our Lady does pray for us if we ask her to. This is the whole reason why we're launching that rosary campaign, to get as many people as possible praying the rosary and asking Our Lady to help us end legal abortion in this country. And I'm certain she doesn't need asking to want to do that. But the more rosaries that we can pray, the more united we will be. So anyway, I appreciate your phone call, and it's always nice when you bring up Our Lady. Thank you for that. Let's go to Betty now, listening in Mesa, Arizona. Good morning, Betty.
Oh, good morning. Just a minute, I have to fix this.
Okay. Speak directly into the phone, because there we go. Okay.
Okay. So I have two questions, actually. One is, my son, I need to know how to respond to my son who told me last night that he does not believe in God.
How old is he?
He's 43.
Okay. And did he say why he doesn't believe in God?
He didn't. And I didn't go there because we were having a discussion about our political ideas. And he was kind of getting argumentative and okay. with me. And so I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to,
didn't want to inflame
him,
the situation.
You know, really upset. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
All right. No, I was just following your point. Okay. So he says he doesn't believe in God. There's really not much you can do about that. And if he gets riled, if you talk about this issue, then maybe the best thing to do is just not talk about it and only get into this topic if he's willing to do so. But in the meantime, though, of course, you'll be praying and asking the Lord to help him come to his senses. You could also, I mean, if he's willing to watch a YouTube video, you could send him a link to, if you have a pen handy, I would encourage you to write this down. I teach apologetics at a couple of colleges, and in my course on apologetics, I require the students to watch a few videos of debates with atheists. And one of the top atheists, at least in his lifetime, was Christopher Hitchens. And he debated a Protestant philosopher by the name of William Lane Craig at Biola University in Southern California. And that is spelled B-I-O-L-A. The reason you need to know the spelling is you can look it up that way. Just look up the Biola debate on Does God Exist? And I think it would be a very good opportunity for your son, maybe for the first time ever, to become acquainted with the case for the existence for God, or a case for the existence for God. And William Lane Craig does a fine job of elucidating that. And then you'll see Christopher Hitchens, who, until his death recently, he was considered one of the top experts, one of the top luminaries, I guess you might say, of modern atheism. And he wrote books, and he gave lectures, and he did debates. And he does not win this debate. In fact, he sort of dismisses a lot of the evidence in favor of God. He doesn't really have an argument against it in many cases. So that might be a good thing to send to your son. Do you think he would watch a video like that? Maybe the two of you could watch it together. What do you think?
I don't know for sure, but it certainly is worth trying. Did you say it? I can find it on YouTube under Biola
yes.
Debate on Does God Exist?
Right, exactly. It's about 2 hours long, professionally filmed, so the quality is quite good. And he may or may not know who Christopher Hitchens was, but if he doesn't know, just say he's up there, or he was up there, with people like Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris and Daniel Dennett and the main proponents in the English language world, the main proponents of atheism. He was considered among the very top guys. And I'm quite certain he's not an atheist anymore, but during that debate, I mean, you see how to make the case for the existence of God and how, in my view at least, his case for the non-existence of God really falls flat. And that could be very eye-opening for your son if he's willing to watch it. So I would give that a try. And, of course, in the meantime, be praying for him and asking him questions whenever he gives the sign that he'd be willing to talk about it. Thank you, and I hope that's helpful to you. Let's go now to Clearwater and talk to Steve, the Stevenator.
All right, Steve Rolo, the Steve Meister, asking me questions.
Steve-O, making copies. Welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. I have a comment and a question. With your
yes,
permission,
sir.
I'd like to recommend a couple of books to the fellow who called in about St. John, had a question about the gospel just earlier. He was asking about a question.
Yeah.
The two books I'd recommend are The Gospel According to St. John by J.N. Sanders. That's part of the Harper's New Testament Commentaries. It's 480 pages of detailed academic discussion of the Gospel of St. John's, and it goes into the language and the translations and just a very scholarly book.
Okay.
I find it quite fascinating. The other book is The Dictionary of the Bible, edited by James Hastings. Are you familiar with that book?
I am not, I'm afraid.
Okay. If you don't, I will send you a copy of it if you'd like. It's 1,000 pages.
That's very generous of you. very generous of you. But no, I wouldn't want you to go to that trouble. But those are good recommendations. And you said you had a question as well?
Yes, sir. My question is, what happens to the souls who are aborted or miscarried? How do they develop? Do they develop personalities in heaven, or how does that work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a fascinating question. We don't know with certitude, because there's always been a question among theologians about, well, what age is somebody, if we can use the term? I mean, are you in heaven the age that you were when you died? It seems to be that most people agree that no, you're probably some perfect age, whatever that may be. But we just don't know. So in the case of the soul, obviously the baby who dies before reaching maturity, there's so much to learn. And so it seems to me that what St. Thomas says about this issue, about our angels, for example, contributing to teaching us in heaven as we enter into the beatific vision, things are revealed to us and taught to us. And that may well be the case. So when you have the soul of an infant who enters into, let's make it really clean and easy. Let's say a baby is born, the baby receives baptism, and then the baby dies. So that baby goes to heaven, sees God face to face. My presumption, in answer to your question, is that all those things, and many other things as well, that the baby would have learned had he or she grown to maturity, that those things are revealed to this child and taught to this child, maybe by the guardian angels. But we can't say with certitude. But I'm certain one thing, and that is that there are no people in heaven who are handicapped in some way or have not been perfected. They will be perfected. And what that means precisely, it's hard to know, but they will know everything that they would otherwise know in their perfection, if that makes sense. What do you think?
Yes, it makes sense, because they are children of God, and God makes perfection, perfect souls.
Right.
He doesn't make imperfect souls. I guess, to clarify my question then, what about I'm using the word soul because I don't know any other word to use. My mother, for example, had a miscarriage early in her marriage. Here we have a soul who is a person but has no personality. So do they develop a personality with their guardian angel?
I believe they do, yeah. I mean, this is speculative theology. So I emphasize the fact that divine revelation has not revealed to us precisely these details, but we can reason our way towards certain conclusions based upon what we do know from divine revelation. One thing we do know is that the souls are made perfect. It says so, for example, in Hebrews chapter 12, where it talks about the angels and the saints in heaven, the souls of the just men made perfect. So that's a description of the souls in heaven. So I think it's reasonable to conclude by way of inference that because you're made perfect in heaven, that extends to everything. So your personality, your knowledge, all of those things that are proper to human beings will be perfected. And that would include, like you said, the personality. You know, a newborn baby really doesn't have a personality, but they develop that over time. And I think that would be just made instantaneous, or it would be accelerated in some way that we don't understand. But it's a fascinating topic, no doubt about it. And great minds like St. Thomas Aquinas have thought deeply about this. So I always enjoy talking about these things. Thank you, Steve. I'll be back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show and your phone calls right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question?
give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Cyrus, I know you're a hardworking man. I think you're the hardest working man in radio. Well, maybe I'm the hardest working man in radio. Drew Mariani might dispute that. I don't know.
You
work hard. I'll grant you that.
Uh-huh.
You grant
hard. This is a setup. I do know a setup when I hear one.
You think this is a setup?
This is a setup.
All right. Well, I just have a bit of advice for you for your off hours if you want to earn some extra money.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I like that.
I saw your ears perked up. This is from Technology Review. People are hiring out their faces to become deepfake style marketing clones. So you probably saw that Seinfeld episode where George becomes a hand model. Remember that?
Yes.
Remember that
one? That's one of the best episodes.
Yeah. It is funny.
Yeah.
So here's how this could work for you. You could put a little extra jingle in your pocket. Like many students, Leary has several part-time jobs. A 23-year-old in Israel, she does waitressing and bartending in Tel Aviv, where she goes to school at the local university. She also sells cars. She works in retail, and she conducts job interviews and onboarding sessions for new employees. She can juggle many jobs in multiple countries because she has hired out her face to Hour One, a startup that uses people's likenesses to create artificial intelligence voiced characters that then appear in marketing and educational videos. It's part of a wave of companies overhauling the digital content that they produce and has big implications for the human workforce. So she does her waitressing in person, but she has really no idea what her digital clones are doing. Hour One is not the only company that's taking deepfake tech mainstream, using it to produce mashups of real footage and AI-generated video. This is why you can never trust anything anymore. Video, audio, photography, doesn't matter. It's now subject to manipulation. And some of these tools are so powerful that it's essentially we've reached the point where it's nearly impossible to tell what's real and what's not real. So you can do that, Cyrus. You could make a little extra coin by hiring out your face. You'd go to like a modeling agency.
Mm-hmm.
If they select you, then you would get, you know, the whole photography treatment, and your face would be fed into the computers, and then digital Cyruses would be popping up all over the world, and who knows what you might be doing in Japan selling whiskey, or who knows what you could be doing.
I'm sure that will work well for a lot of people, but I have a face for radio.
Everybody wonders what you look like. They ask me all the time, what does Cyrus look like?
And
as you know,
I'm sure you're quick.
In your early 20s.
Yeah, I'm sure you're quick to show them some random photo off the internet and say, hey, this is him. Sure. Yeah, that's the ticket.
I think that the photos of you on Twitter that I post are good likenesses of you.
All right, let's move. This story's crazy.
Yeah, so just I know it is crazy. So just be aware, if you want to make, it used to be in the olden days, people would make extra money by donating blood. But in this case, you're donating your very face.
And then who knows what kind of advertisement it's going to pop up on. That could be.
Yeah, could you imagine if you were like traveling, you're traveling on a family vacation and you're in Europe or something, and you see you come on TV to promote a grocery store chain or a car dealership or something like that. I mean, there are plenty of benign possibilities, but there are also a lot of bad possibilities for how that could be used.
Yeah, not a good idea.
Okay, so you're not going to do that?
I'm not going to do it. No, I'm happy right here.
What about the hand modeling career that you've been mulling over?
Now,
not happening?
Oh, I wish I could remember some of these lines from that Seinfeld, but it's been too many years. That's the same episode as the poofy shirt, I believe. The where he's wearing
the pirate shirt.
Oh man, that's funny.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I was probably reading the Bible when you were watching Seinfeld all those years ago. Let's go to Henry in Southern California. Good morning, Henry.
Hey, Patrick, how are you doing today?
I'm well, thank you.
Yes. Last week, Patrick, you had a lady call in about chitter chatter in the sanctuary in the church proper.
Right.
And I'm fortunate to be living here in a San Diego area. I know you're from San Diego as well at one time. Are you familiar with the Prince of Peace Benedictine Abbey in Oceanside?
I am indeed. Yeah, it's a beautiful place.
Yeah. Yes, I am so fortunate to be only living 20 minutes or so away from there. And of course, they're a contemplative order. And silence is maintained at all times. And even the monk will come out before Mass and ensure everybody has their cell phones turned off. And then as people are leaving the church, of course, they admonish everyone to remain quiet in the church.
Yeah.
Because I've attended many churches here in the San Diego area, many parishes, and I was just astonished by, you know, the chitter-chatter. One gentleman was talking about shouting across the church that he bought 3 pounds of artichokes for $1.
Oh, my gosh.
And they have, you know, children running up and down the aisle, and men and boys wearing hats and things of that nature. And I was brought up in the mid-1960s. You know, I was lucky to be catechized by nuns, and, of course, mm-hmm. they went over proper conduct in church. And then
so your point is that we need to maintain reverence in church. Is that right?
Absolutely. And if the callers live are fortunate to live close to a Benedictine monastery, I would encourage them to attend there. Now, they don't do church. They don't do funerals or weddings or baptisms because they're right. a monastery. So, of course, they encourage you to stay in your parish. But Prince of Peace is on a hill, overlooks Camp Pendleton. I'm a retired Marine.
Yep.
So I get to look down on my home base and Pacific Ocean, and it's very beautiful and contemplative grounds for Stations of the Cross
yeah.
of that nature.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you found a good place where you can worship God in spirit and in truth and without all the chitter-chatter. And by the way, I like the fact that you say chitter-chatter for this reason, that my grandson Patrick, who is now, how old is Patrick? I think Patrick's 14. He, as a little guy, used to say chitter-chatter. For chit-chat. And so I thought that was cute. So I started saying chitter-chatter on the radio years ago. And I say it now. And to hear you say it means that other people are now adopting this phrase chitter-chatter, which I very much like. And I have to give attribution to my grandson Patrick because it came from him originally. So there you have it. Well, thank you. And do pray for me, please, and all of us here at Relevant Radio the next time you are in the solitude and silence of the monastery there. Beautiful place. Let's go to James now, listening in Santa Cruz, California. Good morning, James.
Good morning. Yeah, I have a question in regards to the end times. I've been, you know, talking to people and seeing a lot of videos on, you know, Archbishop Vigano and all counter church and apostasy. And I want to know, is there anywhere in Matthew or Revelation, or is that a Catholic thought teaching that there one day will be a counter church or an apostasy within the church, like an eclipse? I'm really confused.
Okay, well, there are several sources that discuss this that are outside of the Bible. So in Matthew chapter 24, for example, where Jesus recounts the signs to watch out for that will accompany the end times, he doesn't mention this per se. But you will see this, for example, in the writings of Pope Paul VI, who referred to, and this may have been a speech rather than something he wrote, but he referred in the late 60s or early 70s, he referred to the smoke of Satan entering into the church, entering even into the temple of the church, meaning the sanctuary. We see Blessed Anna Catherine Emmerich, who was a German mystic who survived for many years, as I understand her story, just on the Holy Eucharist. She was bedridden. She was an invalid. And she talked in her writings that the things that the Lord permitted her to know about, she wrote a lot about in anti-church that would arise, that would mimic aspects of the church, but its intention was to destroy it. So her writings about that are voluminous, and they have, she herself, it seems, has been, and her messages have been approved for, you know, they haven't been condemned or forbidden for people to read them. Also, Akita, the apparition of the Blessed Virgin Mary in Akita, Japan, is very specific about some aspects of this. So in the apparition that took place on October the 13th in 1973, she talked about this, and she says, "I want to see if I can get the, I want to see if I can get the actual words that of what she said herself there, so I can share that with you. But this took place in 1973, and she foretold that there would be a terrible punishment that would come on the world. It would involve fire, and that many people would die. But she talked about in this in the same apparition about how things will get very bad in the church, and there will be bishop against bishop and cardinal against cardinal. And that, as I say, was from back in 1973. I found the specific passage here. So it says, "The work of the devil will infiltrate even into the church in such a way that one will see cardinals opposing cardinals, bishops against other bishops." Now, this was how long ago? Nearly 40 years ago. And actually more than 40 years ago. So 50 years ago, in another couple of years, that will have been 50 years that have elapsed. Now, keep in mind, this is a private revelation, so no one is obliged to accept this. The local bishop there in Akita, Japan, he did approve this message. He investigated and he approved it. So it has at least that level of approval. But whether or not these things will actually happen, or whether or not the things that are happening in the church are consistent with these private revelations, only God knows. We have to take a wait-and-see approach. But for those reasons, I think when you see discord in the church and things that just seem strange to you, it is possible that these are the things that were foretold. And for my money, the best thing to do is to not focus on those problems. Be aware of them. Pray. Ask the Lord to bless our Pope and our bishops and all of us. Do what you're called to do, and do it well, and stay close to Jesus and the sacraments. And then, no matter what happens, it's still going to be okay, because you will be focusing on Christ. So I always try to add that little bit of advice at the end, because I know that many people are very agitated and worried and afraid. And I'm not saying this is necessarily true of you. It may not be true of you, but it is true of some people. And they wind up becoming enslaved to this constant concern, this constant anxiety about real and perceived problems going on in the church. And that's not good. So be aware of them. As Jesus says, you know, watch the signs of the times, watch and pray. But don't let those things derail your ability to do all the other things that you should be doing, if that makes sense. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yes, I do. It's confusing, but thank you for clearing all that up for me.
Yeah, to the extent I did clear it up. I mean, there's so much stuff going on. And I, you know, there's days when honestly I have to scratch my head and say, Lord, I don't get this. I don't understand it. I'm not sure what's going on. But for me, and I'll leave you with this thought, for me personally, I find a lot of encouragement and solace in knowing that this church belongs to Jesus. This is his church. It's not my church. It's his church. And if the Lord permits his church to go through even really serious difficulties, then that's for a reason. And we may be bothered by the things we see. We may be saddened by the things we see. I mean, look at the priest scandals. Jesus didn't want the priest scandals to happen. Jesus wants his priests to be good and faithful and holy men, but Jesus permitted the church to go through the aftermath of these scandals coming to light, and all the suffering and embarrassment and shame and all those other things, not to mention, and most importantly, the suffering of the victims of these priest scandals. Jesus, for whatever his reasons are, he permitted the church to go through this. So I find comfort in that personally, that come what may, this belongs to him, and if he wants this to happen as it's happening, so be it. I just need to stay faithful to him and close to him. So those are my thoughts in a nutshell. I do appreciate the call, though. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back for the home stretch of the Patrick Madrid Show today. And you still have time to call in with your comment or question. The number is 888-914-9149.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149.
We've got it.
That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
You got it. Welcome back. 888-914-9149. That band, Cyrus, is called Crystal Method. Or maybe that's the song. I forget which. Crystal Method.
That's the band name. The song's called High Roller.
High Roller. That's right. You know what they did with this? They got some, like, NASA footage of, you know, ground control talking to the astronauts. And they just spliced it up. They got a couple of comments. You know, I like it.
Oh,
you got it.
Cool.
And then they turned it into a song.
I didn't know that. There's a theme of space going through the whole show today.
You know, you're right about that, with the Jedi white supremacist thing.
And William Shatner's going to space to sing Rocket Man.
Which I think is amazing that he's going into space at 90.
Yeah.
But I really would pay pay-per-view money to see him sing that song, Rocket Man, while he's in space.
Yeah, ditto that.
But he wouldn't be able to smoke because they wouldn't allow that up there. So... can't have everything, right? Let's go to Keith in Wausau, Wisconsin. Hi, Keith.
Hi. So I have a real quick question on marriage and annulment. And it's probably an oddball case, but suppose someone is missing and presumed dead, a validly married Catholic, and his wife remarries. I thought about this watching Castaway for some reason. Right. And it seems to me, right, that when he comes back, he's still validly married to her and could not remarry until she passed. And I believe in a merciful God and therefore a merciful church. So I'm just wondering how one would get around that in this case, because she would be, have two valid marriages, as I understand it. So I'll just...
Actually, let's start there. Okay, let's start there. So she would actually have only... you can only have one valid marriage at a single time. So her second marriage would be invalid, not because of anything she did wrong. She honestly didn't know that her husband was alive. So the church would say to her, as difficult as and sad as this is, you're going to have to separate from the second man and return to your lawful husband. And that's what he would have to do too. So that would be the solution to the problem. Now, that would be a very messy solution, but it would be the solution for them to resume their married life together and for her to leave living with this other man who, in fact, is not her husband, even though she didn't know that. And she went into that marriage in good faith. So that would be how you would resolve that situation.
Okay, thank you. That answers my question. And children, suppose she had children by the second marriage.
Right. So those children would be deemed legitimate. There would be no question about their illegitimacy because that's a matter of law. So they're recognized as legitimate by the law and therefore by the church. And they would still be her children, and she would share those children with this other man. But she couldn't continue living with him, and she couldn't continue living with him as a wife lives with her husband because she's married to the first man. What a terrible situation for anyone to be in. All three of those people, the first husband, the wife, and the second husband, all three of them, just imagine what the pain level would be like in that situation. I cannot begin to imagine it.
All right, I know you got a lot of calls, so thanks for the answer.
You're most welcome. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Let's go now to Don in California. Hi, Don.
Quick question, at risk of, you probably covered this already. Unfortunately, I can't listen to you every day. I wish I could. But Pope Francis issued, I think, a letter that would affect a limited use of the Latin rite in Mass, as it were, from St. John Paul II. Can you elaborate on that and explain as succinctly as possible, sir?
Sure. I'll put it this way. Within the last last month or so, the last 6 weeks thereabouts, Pope Francis issued what's called a motu proprio, and that is, it's Latin for, you could translate it into English as on his own volition or on his own decision, the Pope undertakes to make or change the law of the church. Now, this is, in essence, a rollback, an abrogation of what Pope Benedict XVI did during his pontificate with his motu proprio called Summorum Pontificum. And in that motu proprio, he established the fact that priests do not need permission from their bishops to celebrate the traditional Latin Mass, that the traditional Latin Mass is he desires that it be made widely available, and that parishes, for example, that have a group of people who are asking for a traditional Mass, if it's at all possible, and if there are priests available who can celebrate that Mass, that it should be granted. It should be made as widely available as possible. So in his motu proprio, he was really opening the doors wide for the traditional Latin Mass to flourish. Now, as part of his motu proprio, he mentions in the letter that was sent to the bishops when that was issued that he would like their feedback as to how well or poorly this implementation is going in their diocese. And so that was the premise behind the motu proprio that Pope Francis issued recently. And his statement in the letter to the bishops was that, and I'm paraphrasing here, but in essence what he said was that we did a survey of all the bishops around the world and the results were largely negative. And so his motu proprio essentially just rolls back almost everything that Pope Benedict XVI had promoted. And that has, as you might imagine, it caused a lot of heartburn and is causing a lot of heartburn for groups that are and individuals that are associated with the traditional Latin Mass and who love the traditional Latin Mass. It's made it much more difficult for them to have that. Now, what's interesting about this motu proprio is that it invests the authority to regulate this in a given diocese in the bishop. So the bishop now has this express authority to be able to regulate this. And I was happy to see that many bishops, in keeping with what Pope Francis told them, that many bishops actually came out very quickly and said that the traditional Latin Mass will be available as it has been. And so they followed the letter of what he had to say, and they're having the traditional Latin Mass available. Some dioceses, rather, just about as soon as they received the motu proprio, they shut it all down. There are also some visitations underway or soon to be underway in which religious groups, religious orders, and others who do use only the traditional Latin Mass, they are having meetings with the authorities in Rome. And I don't know what's being talked about at those meetings, but I can presume that it involves kind of telling them that they have to stop. So this is recent, and that's a kind of an overview of it. But one other thing to keep in mind is, by virtue of the fact, or as evidenced by the fact, that Pope Francis essentially reversed the motu proprio that Pope Benedict XVI issued, please note that a future pope can reverse what Pope Francis did with the stroke of a pen. A future pope could just simply say, all right, that's now void, that's over and done with, we're not doing that anymore, now we're going to do this. So if you live long enough, you'll see things change in the church of that nature, discipline and customs and law. And, you know, we may live long enough to see a future pope reverse that. We'll see. Hard to say what will happen, but there it is in a nutshell. What do you think?
Well, that is a very good explanation, and it gives me a little bit more hope. So I'm a 2014 convert, and I have not been able to go to a real Latin Mass. I've actually had the opportunity to attend Mass in the Vatican and once with Pope Francis. So I don't know if that was a Latin Mass. Maybe it was.
No. No, Pope Francis doesn't celebrate the traditional Latin Mass. I mean, he has chosen not to. But that's another interesting point, because St. Peter's Basilica in Rome has been known from time immemorial to have lots and lots of traditional Masses celebrated there, typically on site altars, and that too has been abrogated. So that's no longer permitted. And even I think there was a provision that was put in place that in order to celebrate Mass at all, it has to be a concelebrated Mass. In other words, you can't have a single priest at the altar celebrating Mass. He must have a concelebrant with him. And that's never done in the traditional Latin Mass. There is no role for a concelebrant in the traditional Mass. That's something that we see in the new rite of the Mass. So that's another little wrinkle in the whole thing, another development. I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, I've not enjoyed a Latin Mass. I've heard maybe you and other radio hosts here on Relevant talk about attending regularly or whatever a Latin Mass. I just hope that I can find one, and now I feel anxious to get there.
Well, you are. I'm trying to think of where you're located again. So you are in.
I'm in the Central Valley, just south of Sacramento. I'm in the Stockton Diocese.
Got it. Okay. So you would have to do a little bit of checking, but it's possible that there, that the bishops in that area have permitted some Latin masses to continue. There is a Latin Mass directory online that you can look it up. And then you go by geography. So you would say what city you're in or what zip code, and then you can extend it outward however many miles and see what's available. That's another way to do that. So, yeah, well, I hope that's helpful to you. And things come and go in the Catholic Church. Things change, and it'll be interesting to see how things change in the future. Let's go now. Actually, you know what? Before we do that, I do want to share with you something that was just announced today, and that is a special joint effort on the part of Relevant Radio and EWTN and the Napa Institute to encourage as many people as possible to pray the rosary for an end to legal abortion in this country. The Supreme Court's going to be hearing a case coming up next month that very, very possibly, if they vote the way we hope they vote, they could actually overturn Roe versus Wade, and that's what we're hoping for. So, as Peter Frampton would say, if you feel like we do, then please join us in praying the rosary. You can find out more details in the Relevant Radio app. So if you open up the Relevant Radio app, you'll see right there front and center the story about this breaking news. And we invite you to join us. Let's go back now to the phones. Let's go to Sandra in Walnut, California. Good morning, Sandra.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question in regards to the other muertos. As a Catholic, what is okay and not okay to celebrate? I don't want to do anything that is against. I don't want to offend God. But as far as like pictures and flowers and candles, is that okay? And to also put pictures of my other loved ones? I don't know if that's okay. I've done it in the past, but this last year has really shaken up my faith. So I don't want to do anything to offend God, and that's my question.
That is beautiful, and you know, would that more people had that sort of thoughtful approach to this issue. So I encourage people to stay far away from this folk practice. Now, I realize it's deeply ingrained in Mexican culture. My father's side of the family is 100% Mexican. I mean, there's Spanish in the background there too, obviously, but his entire family, himself included, is all Mexican. So I'm familiar with the practice, the custom, but I object to it on the grounds that it is, and my family never practiced it. So it was never a thing for me growing up. It was never a thing for my cousins or any of my extended family. I never saw Dia de los Muertos practiced by any of my family members. Nonetheless, it is a very popular folk practice, and I encourage people to stay away from it because it's a syncretism of the Catholic faith and a proper reverence for our ancestors, a proper role for praying for them and remembering them. That's all a good thing, and the Church has feast days for that. So we have the Feast of All Souls on November the 2nd, which is intended to do exactly that. It is to pray for them and remember them and thank God for them in our lives, but it goes further than that with the Dia de los Muertos because there are these offerings of food and drink, and some people say, well, it's not really an offering, it's just sort of symbolic, but that is paganism that has been woven into the Catholic faith, and that's wrong because it's not only diluting the Catholic faith, but it's also introducing elements that are incompatible with Christianity. We don't worship our ancestors. We can't placate them or give them relief by bringing flowers or food or cakes or wine or anything like that. Those are all things that come out of paganism. Also, the figure of Santa Muerte, that too is incompatible with the Catholic faith. There is no Saint Death. There is no personage of that sort. If anything, I would say that sort of fixation on death and the things of death is actually pleasing to the evil one because he would love nothing more than to get people to focus on things like that rather than focus on Jesus. So those are just some cursory thoughts on the issue. I will answer your other question. There's certainly nothing wrong with lighting candles in memory of your family members. If you go into a Catholic church and you light a candle in the sanctuary, for example, or, you know, near a statue of Our Lady or something, that's a good thing. It's a traditional pious custom to do. But just don't let it get taken over by the errors in Santa Muerte and the Dia de los Muertos. That's where I would draw the line personally. So the same would hold true for things like the skeletons. I know it's a very popular art form right now. And, you know, the skeletons are interesting looking, no doubt about that. I'm not saying it's evil, but it's, you know, it doesn't belong in a religious setting, if you ask me. So does that help a little bit? Does that give you a few more things to think about?
Yes, thank you so much.
You are most welcome. I ran out of time. Look at that. Thank you, Sandra. I look forward to being with you again tomorrow, same Pat time, same Pat channel. And until then, please pray for me, and I will pray for you. God bless you.